Hello and welcome to KCast, a new podcast series brought to you by the Dublin creative agency Kick. On this podcast, we'll bring you the new, the innovative and the talked about from Ireland and all around the world. Our next guest today is Tom Kinsella, a marketeer who spearheaded incredible advertising when he worked with Diageo and since 2012 has changed the way banks interact with people, having roles as CMO and now head of homes with AIB. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you on KCast. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So to start off the conversation, we're going to do a bit of a quick fire. I'm going to give you two options and you answer whichever option comes to your head first, all right? So you have two choices, O'Connell or Driscoll?
O'Connell.
Guinness, Murphy's?
Guinness.
Rom-com or action?
Action.
George Michael or Boy George?
Neither.
Ryanair or Aer Lingus?
Aer Lingus.
Staycation or vacation?
This year, staycation.
Actually, that's interesting you say that. So what do you think businesses need to do to kind of convince people to stay in Ireland, considering obviously COVID?
I think it's about value, isn't it? So can you get decent value in Ireland for your buck? So if people see that the cost of a week is twice what it's going to cost them for a week in Spain, naturally, they're going to be more tempted to jump on a flight and go to Spain. Yeah. That's the problem. That's the biggest issue. And you hear shocking stories of the price of a B&B or an Airbnb for a week in Ireland is, you know, it can be huge. Yeah. And that's the single biggest issue, I think.
I think one of the things that we wanted to talk to you, or especially I wanted to talk to you, having worked on the brand myself and a different guys, is Guinness.
Yeah.
And your work on the Christmas ads.
Yeah.
So while you were leading the Guinness marketing campaigns during your time at Diageo, one campaign that did have a major part to play in, I suppose, Irish psyche and has become iconic with every type of demographic, it tugs on the heartstrings of every person, every age, is your iconic Christmas ad. And I'd love to just understand what the background was to creating that ad. And did you intend to make something incredibly epic, or was that just how it evolved?
I think I had the best job in the world for about 5 years doing advertising for Diageo. And I've made some amazing ads, but I've made lots of turkeys, right? So, and we won't talk about those. The Guinness Christmas ad is probably, you know, the ad that'll be on the gravestone in terms of legacy work. We had seen that basically Coca-Cola had stolen Christmas and Budweiser had stolen Christmas. Now, ironically, Budweiser was a Diageo brand and that had its own iconic Christmas ad. And really, it was about how come Guinness has let Christmas slip? And how do we reclaim Guinness, reclaim Christmas for an Irish brand like Guinness? And the brief was effectively it was a Christmas card from Guinness. And that's what it was intended to be. We did set out with the intent of making an ad that was similar to the Coca-Cola truck or the Budweiser Clydesdale's Christmas ad, an ad that would get reused year on year on year. And that was the way that we managed to get the investment for it internally, because it was a big production. And it didn't get too much consumer research at the time. Got some, but not too much, which was helpful. Mm-hmm. And you had just a beautiful idea from Pat and Mark, which was beautifully directed and produced. And the soundtrack itself is pretty special. And it's just one of those ads. Sometimes everything just goes right, and we had plenty of fights and rows in post production afterwards. But the final product stands the test of time. Yeah, that was brilliant. And you had an aligned client and an aligned agency. And it wasn't, you know, the John Lewis ad, you know, they start that months and months and months in advance because the scale of the campaign that goes with it. Ours was a fairly late in the day thought to go and do it. So it didn't, that's why I said there wasn't huge rounds of customer research, et cetera, et cetera. it was, let's just get on with this.
That's actually interesting you say that, because sometimes that can actually paralyze you into making decisions when you have too much kind of information. Sometimes too much information is a bad thing, right?
I think you can see ads that have been made by research. And what the problem is, people let creativity be dictated by research. Research is a voice in the room. That's all it is. It is one voice. It is no more valid than any other voice in the room and should never be, well, the research says X, therefore we do this. That is just not how you make advertising. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, advertising is not a science. It is creativity. There is a qualitative nature to it, and there's a subjective nature to it. And you've got to trust your instinct on it.
With creativity, it sometimes just comes out of the blue, right? Sometimes,
yeah, for sure.
I notice working with a lot of people within the industry, you could be at home. Creativity never kind of switches off. It's always on. You can be influenced by something you see or something you read or hear.
Absolutely.
And that can be the kind of the focal point then for you to come up with an amazing thought. Yeah. So if we move on a little bit and we look at your transition from the alcohol industry into the financial sector. So it's quite a change, right?
You betcha.
How big a challenge was that? And how big was the difference in terms of the corporate culture and the brand personalities that you work on?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I certainly never saw on my career path that I was going to end up being a banker, that's for sure. But now here I am, and I am most definitely a banker. And I think that's a good thing. It's interesting. You go from working for a company like Diageo that has huge brands and has a global footprint. You know, it's a big multinational company. You can draw inspiration from anywhere. And there's lots of great campaigns going on. And it's a super company. Like, it is a company that gets creativity. To going to work for AIB, which clearly is not a multinational, but is a massive Irish company. You know, and its footprint in Ireland is, and its influence in Ireland is huge. And you go from working on great alcohol brands, which are great fun. Like, the alcohol brands are great fun to work on, but ultimately not important. Right? They're ultimately just not important. Whereas AIB is systemically important to the economic survival of the country. Now, with that comes great responsibility on AIB to behave itself and to play its role properly within the Irish economy. And I think it does that to a great extent. But it allows you to do things which are, because fundamentally finance is boring, right? It's not a category where you'd wake up and think, oh, this is a great opportunity to be creative. In actual fact, that is the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, that is, because it is so dry.
It's unexpected, right?
It's unexpected. And people think it's not emotional. And yet there is nothing more emotional than your finances. If somebody comes along and tries to steal a tenner out of your wallet, see what happens.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody ever woke up and said, I want a mortgage. But people wake up and say, I want a home. And it is a hugely emotional topic. So, and we use that really as our springboard with the guys and girls in Rothko. And together, and again, it was a joint venture in terms of, let's take this opportunity to really go after trying to change the perceptions of how AIB is perceived, but also reposition AIB about how it behaves within the Irish psyche and in the Irish marketplace, and reposition how we present finance into the market. And that's really what it's been about. And we also said we wanted to be the most creative brand. So you've got to set yourself targets and benchmarks that you go after. Nobody likes banks.
Exactly. I just about to say it as well. Convincing people that banks can be trusted is a massive challenge.
Yeah.
How did you then face that challenge?
I think back in the day, I think bankers certainly suffered from a self-delusional piece, thinking that they were important and loved. Nobody wakes up in the morning and goes, I wonder how AIB is doing today, right? And banks only get noticed when things stop working. So, and it's like the light switch in your bedroom. You only notice it, you know, when the light doesn't come on. If the ATM isn't working, or your app goes down, or you get declined for a loan, whatever it is, that's when you really notice banks. And Banks suffered a catastrophic failure back in 08 in terms of their perception in the marketplace of how people view them. They're still getting over that, and banks still aren't completely trusted. And I get that. I completely understand why that would be the case. So we set out in our mission is to really put the customer at the very heart of the operation and to really go after. Our ambition was to make and is to make AIB a customer-centric business, that the customer's at the heart of the business. The bankers are not at the heart of the business. I'm not at the heart of the business. It's about the customer. And it's just back to basics, right? And customers have never been at the center of banks traditionally. It's been about the banks. It's been about what's the best thing to do for the bank as opposed to what's the best thing to do for the customer. Now, that it really flips the whole thing on its head. And I, you know, when I talk to other companies, so when you talk to real customer-centered companies, you know, and you say, well, how do you manage to have the customer at the heart of your business? They don't understand the question because it's in the DNA of the business. It just comes naturally about... But changing it from being a bank-centered business to a customer-centered business, you've got to reimagine everything from the start, and you've got to reimagine the experience of what you go through. So if you take, getting a mortgage, first of all, nobody wants a mortgage, mm-hmm. right? Everybody wants a home.
Yeah.
Okay, number one. Number two, for the vast majority of people, that's going to be the most important financial decision they make in their lives, and it's going to be the most important financial journey they go on. And yet, it has been notoriously poor as an experience for customers. So we said, well, that makes no sense. This is our bread and butter. So we've invested millions in actually going after to make it a much easier journey for customers. So I'll give you an example of a very quick one, which is, you know, there are apps for everything. You can track your pizza, right? Delivery. You weren't able to track your mortgage journey. Where am I on the mortgage journey? Have the documents been uploaded? Which part of the journey are the documents at, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we brought out an app. You can now track, you can upload your documents, you can track it, et cetera. You can see exactly where you are in the journey, which is a big step forward for mortgages, but it's the world that we're all used to and that we live in. So it's just about changing that. The other piece is AIB isn't the hero in this journey. The bankers, I'm not the hero in this journey. The customer's the hero. The customer's the person deciding to do something, and it's about us supporting the customer. That's the role, right? So hence the notion of, in the business world, backing brave, right? The bravery is the customer's bravery. We're not the brave ones. The customer's the brave one. Our job is to back. Our job is to support. And really understanding that role becomes absolutely crucial. and that's where we developed our corporate purpose. So the AIB corporate purpose is to back our customers to achieve their dreams and ambitions. So it's to back our customers so that they can achieve, not us, so that they can achieve their dreams and their ambitions. And that's really about understanding what your role is in your customers' lives.
How do you then remove the concern, fear, or worry? How do you end up changing the perception then of the approach that people have towards banks, the mentality towards it?
Slowly is the answer. It doesn't happen overnight. So for the vast majority of our customers, the vast majority, their branch is now their mobile phone.
Yeah.
Right. So the vast majority of our customers never go near a branch anymore because they have no need to go near it because they can do everything they want on their mobile or by phone. And that's, you know, so that's number one. So therefore maintaining a connection with a customer is hugely important.
Yeah.
And you do it in different ways. You do it by having a really, really smooth user experience on your app that people feel actually, you know, these guys know what they're doing. Number one. Number two, people are fearful of things like going on the mortgage journey, as you say, because they don't know what it is, they don't understand it. And the answer to that is really around trying to make that journey as open and as transparent as possible and making it as good as possible. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, what's going to work is when a customer goes through that journey and then turns around and says to a mate, Jesus, if you ever get a mortgage, AIB is the place to go, because that was an awful lot easier than I thought it was. Seamless, right? And that is the ultimate
Just still touching or moving from the financial crisis in 2008, the 2008 financial system came apart, whereas now in the state that we're in now with COVID, many of people have just stopped going to work, right?
Yeah.
Would you feel more optimistic about what we're coming out of now?
Yeah.
And I suppose what we're hoping to come out of, because obviously things are changing every day.
Getting to the tough questions now, aren't we? Yeah.
So we ask the tough questions.
So I guess back in 2008, when I was still merrily selling booze, that crash was a property-based crash, effectively. It was a credit-based crash. It was driven by the financial system and a whole pile of reasons behind that. Today, it is a, you know, it's a pandemic-based reality that we all live in, and it's not just a banking issue. This is a full social slash commercial reality. We're all in this together. So I think, you know, there are going to be tough times ahead. There's no doubt about that, but it's tough times for everybody. I think the only good news is that we're all an awful lot stronger going into it. Certainly the banks are much in a much stronger position going into this than they would have been back in 2008, much stronger. I think the government have done a pretty good job in terms of A, public health, but B, in terms of having that wage subsidy there, has proved absolutely crucial to keeping the economy open and keeping the economy moving. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be a tough couple of years ahead. But we all have to hunker down and get on with it.
In saying that, those businesses who've had traditional kind of models in the past, potentially some of them are coming out of this going, okay, I can change the way I work.
Yeah.
I can trust my staff to work from home and continue to bring in revenue.
Yeah.
And equally so from the banking perspective, because you guys were so far ahead when it came to having the app and the digital and the journey in place, it meant that, okay, yes, there's a bit of review and a reshuffle, but it meant that a lot of the pieces of the puzzle were already in place. Now it's a case of the removing of interacting with people has probably become more prevalent now than ever. Where do you think the next step is now when things come back to our new normal?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think the notion of working in an office 5 days a week is gone forever. So I don't ever see myself working 5 days a week in an office ever again. You know, and if somebody had said to me 3-4 months ago, you're going to work from home now, I would have been distraught at the notion. But the fact that we all had to jump together and do it made it so much easier, and it takes time to get used to it, but we're all there. So that brings a different way of working into play. Now, mind you, I've always said, someone said we've been encouraging agile working for a long time now in AIB, and someone said, well, what happens if somebody's at home and not working? And I said, well, if they're that kind of person, I prefer to have them at home not working than in the office not working, where everyone can see them not working, right?
And just, And it's essentially the cream will rise to the top anyway.
Correct.
Because they'll be found out in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other piece is, I think, and I'm sure AIB is not alone in this, but our staff have been extraordinary in terms of the lengths they have gone to keep the place working and the amount of hours that they've put in. You know, and if I think about you know, payment breaks, so mortgage payment breaks, personal credit payment breaks for small businesses, you know, there's about 70,000 of those we've put in place now for our customers. That takes a huge amount of engineering. And that forces us to change how we work at a much greater pace, but still very clearly within the regulations, which has been a fantastic learning for all of us. I think going forward, those businesses that learn to adapt fast will be the ones that, you know, out of the, you know, there's huge opportunity in a recession, huge opportunity for people. People will still want to talk to a human. So, you know, you can absolutely do your, if you take your, go back to the mortgage, you can do it all online now. We have a full online journey. You don't need to talk to us at all if you choose not to. But 99.99% of people want the security of talking to a person. They want to know that who is their person in the bank guiding them through this journey. For some people, that means walking into the branch, and we still have loads of people coming to the branch, but other people are happy to do it on the telephone or by video. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be face-to-face anymore.
Yeah.
that said, never underestimate the power of having, you know, people embedded in your communities.
Yeah.
We're a bank. Money is the fuel for a community. And having people embedded in communities right around the country is a great asset. I mean, I think if a bank came in tomorrow and said, no bank is going to come in here tomorrow and say, right, what we're going to do now is we're going to set up in Ireland and we're going to open up 200 branches. Don't do it, right? Because the expense of it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just won't happen. It's one of the great defenses that we have, is that we do have our branch network, is that we do have local people working in local communities who understand the local community. And each local community has different needs and wants and quirks. And, you know, our staff are firmly embedded in it, which is brilliant.
Speaking then of, I suppose, technology or faceless technologies, one technology and platform that isn't faceless is Facebook, obviously, with Zuckerberg and everything that he's been known for. But there's a lot of talk about Facebook, and in particular, taking responsibility for what they publish.
Yeah.
And I suppose being under pressure by some multinationals to address this. So what would your view be of this? Is it an open publishing platform where people can say what they want and have the right to reply and do what they want, or should it be moderated? And there's pressure coming in from the likes of Diageo, Unilever, and even Starbucks have been putting a bit of pressure on Zuckerberg. What's your take on it?
Well, ultimately, it's going to be about the money, right? So that's what's good. Like, so if the money starts walking away from Facebook, Facebook will take action. So that's just the way the world works. I think the problem with social media is that it's you're hidden. So somebody who's the most reasonable person in the world suddenly becomes an absolute troll online because they can, and nobody knows it's them, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that's it's the breeding ground for that. I think you have to have a degree of moderation. I really do. Otherwise, I think social media just becomes, it happens time, it just becomes a complete cesspit. And it's just becomes a hive of negativity because, again, people are faceless.
There's an audience and a generation now that growing up with social media being just the norm. So
completely.
It's now the elements of if you get a like, how happy that makes you feel. If somebody's saying something negative about you, that's your everything. And as we evolve and as that generation evolves, I think there's a huge learning curve for people to kind of realize that's an intangible kind of form that doesn't actually affect how you act in your day-to-day unless you let it and allow it.
My kids have their own YouTube channels. They love making and TikTok and all. They put up videos and I always say to them, like, knock themselves out. They should go for it. They should engage in the world they live in. I think anyone who tries to keep kids away from the internet is sorely mistaken. It would have been like trying to keep kids away from newspapers 100 years ago. However, I keep saying to them, don't ever put anything up on the internet that's going to embarrass you, that you're going to be embarrassed about, because it's there forever.
Yeah.
Right? And in 20 years' time, when they're going to try and get a job somewhere, people won't be doing research to see what kind of jobs you had in the past. They'll be trawling you off the internet and saying, right, what type of character is this? You know, and that's going to be the way it works. And they'll start producing these. It's like, hang on, look at this video you made when you were 7. And there are, you know, there is basing decisions on people. We're not a million miles away where, you know, people's credit applications will be based off your social interaction.
Wow.
So a man or woman walks in and says, I'd like to borrow 100 euros, please. And you go, certainly, sir. What's your name? And we stick your name into Google. And then it transpires that we can see that you've spent a lot of time on Twitter talking about the horses in Newmarket. And it's like, oh, okay. I'm not sure that's the kind of, you know, so.
Like, that's a game changer.
That would be a game changer, yeah. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
No, it won't be the only voice making that decision, but it will be something that's taken into consideration.
So people, if they know that their actions online are going to have some sort of repercussion.
Well, exactly. And artificial intelligence comes into play and it'll say, we know that, you know, 99 times out of 100, somebody who's talking about gambling online, yeah, X, Y, and Z comes from that. So there's, you know, there's,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think, look, social media is here.
With technology and looking at how it's been embraced at the moment, okay, so there's a big, big challenge in, I suppose, the competitive set now in terms of how people are using their money and how, yeah, people are engaging with people. So fundamentally, there's been a change to banking in a way through Revolut and, yeah, through N26, yeah, and other providers. They're now playing a pivotal role in how people spend money. How does a bank like AIB that's focused on the customer service and having the customer at the center of everything, mm-hmm, compete in a space like that?
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
It is,
the best thing that's happened banking is technology and the enablement of bringing new competitors into the marketplace. And the reason I say that is because there's nothing that is better for the customer than a competitive market. And it forces the old traditional legacy banks like us and other competitors in the marketplace to actually be much more on their toes, be much more at the forefront in terms of investing in technology, in looking to the future and saying, you know, what's next? How do we get ahead? You know, the threat of a digital-only bank coming in, stealing our customers. And remember, in banking, it's not about today or tomorrow. Banking is a long-term business.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 15-year-old who signs up for Revolut today, that doesn't cost AIB any lost revenue today. The problem is we've lost a relationship that in 20 years' time could have been a relationship that led to a customer taking out a mortgage.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, and that's the sort of thing that keeps me awake at night is, you know, I want to recruit the 15-year-old today, not because they bring in tons of revenue, they bring in no revenue, but it's about establishing that lifelong journey together and them valuing the experience we give them, the expertise that we have there, the fact that we are local, et cetera, et cetera. I've got to earn that respect, right? It's not a you know, it used to be a stage of there was no nobody else in the finance game except for AIB and the obvious other competitors who all had their branches, and the day of the branch manager being, you know, one of the pillars of society, all that good stuff. The world has changed and the customer is much more in charge now. And from a marketplace point of view, the likes of the Revolut and Co, brilliant from a competition perspective, brilliant for customers, and brilliant in terms of making my life, professional life, much more interesting, yeah, and much more challenging in terms of how do we stay ahead? Where are we going to next?
How do you?
Oh, but I mean, it's innovate or die.
Yeah.
Right? So innovate or die. You know, we're all extraordinarily used to the app on your phone now. Mobile banking only came to Ireland 8-9 years ago. Like it's, and we all think we've been doing it for years and years and years. But it's relatively new. So where do you go next? How do you iterate that out? What services can you have on the app? You know, most people do not want to go into a branch.
Yeah.
They don't, right? And branches over time have to become much more about actually the advice, the mentoring, sales and service, that actually, as opposed to physical cash transactions, right? Because people just don't want to do that anymore. So you have to ensure that your digital experience is absolute rock and roll in terms of being the cream of the crop.
It's a great now, challenge.
A lot of the time, some of these online providers, they've done a much better job at being cool.
Yeah.
Right? So people think some of them are just cool. Oh, I want to get that card because that's cool. And isn't it great to be seen with it? And actually, the services they provide are absolutely no better and in some cases inferior to what we do in terms of our app. But
perception.
It's perception. Yeah. You know?
And it's like having a badge of honor depending if you have... Yeah. If you have one type of card versus another,
correct.
Right? And it's those small little kind of psychological things that play a big role in people's decision making.
Of course it is. Yeah, yeah. And again, that goes back to emotion.
Yeah.
Right. And whether we like it or not, or are willing to admit to it, you know, we make decisions. We make our decisions emotionally first, and then we rationalize them afterwards to support our emotional decision. And brands are all about emotion,
yeah,
right? Feeling affinity to a brand is an emotional connection. And that's why the likes of some of the new online competitors and digital-only competitors have done a very good job, because they're just, you know, the people just think it's cool.
Yeah, and it's kind of in a renaissance era as well, isn't it? Something new, fresh and different, and people kind of go, oh.
And that's, you know, and I don't knock the competition. I have huge respect for the competition, because the minute you start knocking the competition or complacent about competition, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And I use them as a, for me, it's brilliant. They're a great spur in terms of get up off your ass, make it better for the customer. Where are we going next? And they're, you know, and it enables you to build an investment model to seek out investment in the business to support the customer experience. Because it's not just an endless pit of money. It's not, let's go to the innovation cash box and take out $1 million to do something. Because while I'm pitching for investment, I've got colleagues in corporate banking who are also pitching for investment for something that they're trying to do. So there's a, you know, there is competition for that hard
edge. Get a piece of the pie. Yeah. So if we look then, that brings us kind of nicely on to the future of banking.
Yeah.
And what do you believe we should expect from banks in the future? You touched on it a little bit earlier on about potential artificial intelligence making a big play. But what innovation do you see or do you believe will enhance people's experience?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, people need to be very demanding of their banks. Customers need to be as demanding of their banks as they are of any other aspect of their lives. So, and remember, the customer is in charge, not the bank. Right? So that's first and foremost. You should expect the same level of innovation from in your financial life that you will get in any other part of your life. I mean, your car now will almost make you a cup of tea. They're so automated at this stage, you know, and you should be. We should be getting that way in banks, you know, and it the route will be more and more digitized. The route will be more and more self-service. The route will be more and more automation. But when you want that human connection, it's there for you, and it has to be there for you, and you have to be able to go. If I want to go and see somebody to talk about, remember, a kid walking into a bank looking for the 500 euros to borrow to go on their J1 over to the US for the summer. That is a huge, huge moment in that kid's life. And whilst that kid is a digital native and knows exactly how, and would be much better than me at ever using social media and stuff, the whole notion of borrowing 500 euros is a completely alien and terrifying concept. They don't know how it works, right? So in that moment, somebody who spends 23 and a half hours a day with their head glued to their phone actually wants to lift their head and talk to somebody. And having that connection there and available for our customers is absolutely critical to it. But I think what we know about our customers, that pool of knowledge is constantly growing. How we use that data in an aggregated sense to actually provide better services for our customers is the way forward. I think competition is only going to grow. And you see all sorts of people trying to get into the financial services market, and there will be more competition for customers, which again is great for the marketplace, great for customers, and I think it's great for AIB, because as I said, it forces us to be on our toes. And I think that the future will be, you know, we'll have digital at its very heart, and then you build out from there for the key moments. There's a brilliant basics, right? So brilliant basics of banking just should always work. You should never have to think about it, right? You should never, ever have to think about and the only time you ever think about your brilliant basics of banking is when they don't work. Yeah. What do you mean my salary didn't go into my account this month? What do you mean the ATM is not working? What do you mean my contactless is broken?
It's quite exciting to hear what potentially is coming down the line, but also the challenges that you're
I think it's, look, I'm in AIB since 2012. Yeah. It's a fascinating category, you know. It really, I you know, it's a category that I knew nothing about going into it, and I'm learning every single day. It's a fascinating category, it really is. And I think AIB is an amazing business. It is, like, it is populated by some of the brightest, smartest people that I have ever come across in my life, who are completely and utterly passionate about trying to do the right thing, which is a brilliant place to work. And I think AIB has come a long way on its journey in terms of trying to be customer-centered. Are we there yet? Absolutely not. Right? We've still got a long way to go, but we're making great strides on it. I think the future is bright for a business, any business that really puts a customer at its heart, invests its money in making customers' lives better, will do well. Look after your customer and the business will take care of itself ultimately. And that's really the name of the game. And that basic principle applies as to whether it's banking, booze, whatever category.
The fruits of your work and labour has come through, and having led the teams that you've been ahead of to the marketing teams of the year twice in a row.
Yeah.
But also that there's an appetite there within the business to allow that opportunity to be creative, to grow and to try new things and learn from whatever failings, but then obviously adapt and improve whatever things that are doing well.
Yeah.
There's an appetite in there.
Yeah, there's a huge appetite to reach for the stars. I mean, you mentioned the marketing team of the year thing. I mean, I joined in 2012. I mean, AIB wasn't exactly known as a marketing powerhouse back then, and banks in general wouldn't be known as a place for a serious marketeer to go and, you know, ply their trade. And we said, well, why not? Yeah. So we set out our stall to say that we wanted to become the best marketing team in the world. And that the step on that was to become the best marketing team in Ireland. And at that stage, people were looking at us going, you boys and girls have lost the plot. And it's like, well, why not? Why can't we be the best marketing team? You know, recruit the right people, invest in developing the people, invest in a way of building brands, be truly creative, always strive for the best, always strive to work with the best people. And I think we've worked with some of the best people in the agencies we've worked with. Put the customer at the heart, and why not? And I think some of the work that the team have done over the last 7 or 8 years has been truly outstanding, be it the GAA work, be it backing Brave, whatever. There's loads of examples that I think have been truly outstanding. And I'm delighted that, you know, the team won that reward 2 years in a row. I mean, it's a fantastic achievement for the team.
Now that you're head of homes and now running that division, and that's a whole new division, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that evolves now over the next while.
Yeah.
You know, because again, like, people are saying to you, you can't do things potentially, and you're going, why not? Of course, you can. Let's try.
Yeah, and look, banking is, I thought booze was heavily regulated as a business, and it is. Banking is a completely different kettle of fish.
It
is extraordinarily regulated, and we all know the reasons why.
Yeah.
And so you have to operate very clearly within those regulations, but that's fine. You know, you operate within the tram lines, but once you're inside the tram lines, just keep asking yourself, why not? Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that?
And keep pushing the boundaries.
Keep pushing the boundaries, but always in service of the customer. How do we make the customer's life easier? How do we make the customer's life better? How do we make it about the customer, not about us? That's why it's called homes, right? So my business is about homes. It's not about mortgages, right? Because people's want a home, they don't want a mortgage. So in my case, backing our customers to achieve their dreams and ambitions is about backing our customers to help them find a place they can call home. That's what we're about.
Lovely. But I think, Tom, on that note, I'd like to thank you very much for coming in and being part of KCast. And to all our listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode. KCast is a new podcast from Kick, the creative agency here in Dublin. KCast brings you the new, the innovative, and the talked about. So look out for the next episode. And to find out more, visit weekkick.ie. Tom, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me.
So for now, goodbye, and thank you very much for listening.